My name is Naoki Yoshida from Nagoya University in Japan, and so today I'd like to talk about the primordial star formation. Well, in fact, I could talk over 3 hours, including the sociology of this interesting community. But anyway, I have 15 minutes, so I focus on these three topics we're doing here. Oh, feel free to interrupt me if you have questions. Admittedly, much exaggeration, we usually say, we do know the initial condition, and also we know the equations to solve to attack to this interesting problem of the primordial star formation. Okay. So since we know the cosmological initial conditions, we don't really need to go the parameter space extrapolation. Okay. And there are subtle issues on dark matter, but usually we don't think it's a serious issue, okay? And for the primordial star formation case, we believe, you know, within the standard model, magnetic field, dust, and cosmic rays, all of these complications you have aren't much important, okay? Although there are some, you know, non-standard models like inflation-generated magnetic field, or even dust, or, you know, cosmic rays from decaying particles, something like that. But still within the standard model, we don't have to think about very seriously, right? So this is the initial condition, we say, the standard lambda cold dark matter model from a recent cosmological estimate using various large-scale structure observations. Okay, so in our universe, the energy content is dominated by dark energy, and about 1/4 of dark matter, the tiny bit of atoms, the baryons, mostly hydrogen and helium, and a little bit of deuterium. So we know these matter energy content, and then the statistics of the initial density field is the so-called Gaussian random field, which has a very nice feature that only a single power spectrum can describe everything, from 2-point, 4-point, 6-point statistics to everything. Okay, and here is the power spectrum, typically cosmology people plot, starting from megaparsec scale to very large scale of gigaparsec. So this matter density power spectrum has been proved like observationally using various set, a broad class of observations from Lyman alpha forest here, gravitational lensing, and galaxy-galaxy clustering, galaxy cluster abundance, and cosmic microwave background, okay, which shows a beautifully a converged, nice, like, you know, very nice feature of a smooth power spectrum. So we start from this initial condition, but I have a cautionary remark that to go to the star formation scale, the stellar scale, we do a significant extrapolation from this scale. Typically, we set up things on the parsec or kiloparsec scale. Observations only prove up to down to megaparsec scale. So this is what we need to keep in mind. That although we have a well-established cosmological model, we really need to extrapolate things down to the stellar levels. Okay. Oh, the blue curve is a kind of, say, the model prediction for this lambda CDM model. Okay. Is this kind of topic familiar to you, or sort of, you have heard of? Okay. Okay, so. Right. So following this prescription, according to the given power spectrum, we just generate the random Gaussian field for the density and associated velocity field. And basically, that's it. So typically, star formation in the early universe happens in this order. Like, you know, the cosmological recombination occurs at Z of about, you know, 1089 plus minus 1 or so. Okay. About 400,000 years later, after the Big Bang. And since then, because there are tiny matter density perturbations, the nonlinear structure growth occurs, and small mass dark matter halos are assembled, say, within a few hundred million years. And within the dark matter halo, the gas is virialized to high temperature, and a chemical reaction takes place to form H2 molecules. Only one available coolant in the early universe. There's no dust. Okay. H2 formation takes place using the leftover electrons from the recombination, about 10 to the minus 4 or so in number density, in a fractional number. Then molecular gas cloud, the so-called cold primordial gas cloud, is formed at the center of dark matter halos. Then when enough mass is accumulated onto the gas cloud or at the center of dark matter halos, then runaway collapse takes place. This is mostly what cosmology people call star formation. A typical example is like this. This is actually Japanese, so this is the gas distribution and in a megaparsec scale. And you see here the gas distribution, and the yellow spots at the intersect of these complex filaments are the so-called molecular clouds. Typically, there are only one or possibly two molecular gas clouds in a single dark matter halo, just at the center of each dark matter halo. Okay. The properties of the dark matter halos are just like mass is about 1 million solar mass, corresponding to the virial temperature of 1 or 2,000 Kelvin, okay, which is quite enough for the chemical reactions to take place to form enough molecular hydrogen. This is the year of 20 or 70, but this epoch strongly depends on the exact amplitude of the power spectrum. Well, one thing to note is these halos are small, but yet they are strongly clustered because of the bias with respect to the underlying mass density field. These are like 3 to 4, 5 sigma fluctuations of the density field. Omega parsec, co-moving. Right, just like the larger scale structure, because you know the power spectrum is almost scale free. So this is like a downsized version of the cosmological large scale structure, also on a tiny scale. Right. And afterward, things get more complicated. This is a famous diagram of Kazuo Mukai, you know, probably you've seen many times in the next conference. So this plot shows the characteristic thermal evolution of a collapsing primordial gas cloud. So up to here, I already described the H2 formation when cooling takes place within a dark matter halo. So after the runaway collapse is triggered, the gas gets heated to our higher and higher density and to higher temperatures. Well, I wouldn't explain each part of this complicated processes, molecular and atomic processes. But the whole point is, maybe I should show this first. The whole point is in our case, the effective equation of state is a kind of output rather than an input. So by implementing these molecular and atomic physics, we can get this sort of smooth effective equation of state, like without assuming any a priori one, okay? Somehow I feel this talk is like non-causal compared to other things. On Tuesday we had a lot of like, you know, I feel like being sacrificed. please laugh and talk. And why don't you eat? Okay. Yeah. I really feel different. Okay. Is it any better? Yes. Yeah. Right. So it's not a universal one. So this is like characteristic for a single primordial gas cloud. So, yeah, right.
You are right.
Right, there are actually various math scales, but the characteristic one is here when the runaway collapse occurs. That is about 1,000 solar mass, or say a few hundred to 1,000 solar mass. That is a Jeans mass at this point. So the entire gas cloud starts collapsing right after this point. But of course, there, you know, if you plot the Jeans mass like this from 1,000 to say here about 0.1 solar mass or so, right? Yeah, yes, right. Oh. Yeah, of course. So. Exactly, yes. We do. In approximate way. It's rather in a technical detail. So could you ask me once again if it is not very important later? Because this is supposed to be rather introductory, so. Yeah. In fact, this, yeah. Roughly 1.1, but there are some slight deviations here and up there because of each process is there. Here, for example. Yeah, I will cover all of these topics. Hopefully. Right, okay. Yeah, so maybe I need to mention that there are not only atomic and the molecular processes, we do have some, you know, radiative processes here and here. Okay. Right, and this is just to, like, you know, show how things happen. So, and fortunately, we have enough computer power right now and good enough in resolution, provided that we implement it. All of these physics appropriately. So starting from a megaparsec volume, we just follow the collapse of a single gas cloud to down to say solar radius scale, right? This is the most recent calculation. So up to this point, we are also like reasonably confident and comfortable that we are doing things about right, well, mostly right. And here is a kind of, say, concordance or converged conclusions we usually have that the first stars, primordial stars in the very early universe, are likely very massive. And there are three reasons, all combined together. So, as I said, the one important mass scale is the Jeans mass at the onset of collapse. That is about 1,000 solar mass. So we have a reservoir of 1,000 solar mass gas contracting a cloud. But note that the overall, the star formation efficiency is very low because we have a 1 million solar mass dark halo. Within that, about 100,000 solar mass gas. And within that, only 1,000 solar mass is probably available to star formation. The actual mass of the star would be even smaller. Okay, so the overall star formation efficiency is very low. In principle, you know, this gas, this mass can be accumulated onto a single point, a single star, right? So this is roughly the maximum we can hope. Yeah. Right. Okay. And
Why
it,
don't you start teeing off of the Phoenix book, please? Just give us a little bit more detail. What does the density distribution look like when you have these pictures that are hard to look at these things? If I start at a parsec and I go inward to your planar plane, is it a power law? Is it a Bose power law? Is it a Bose
Okay.
thing? Is it a complex? Can you just give us a little more detail here?
Okay.
I don't know what the answer is,
So
but
everyone's hurrying up. Okay, then I
oh,
should
there
do
you
it.
have it. Okay.
I have it. Yes. So just a preview that the, all the way to the 10 to the 21st, we get a very nice power of r to the minus 2.2, spherically averaged. Then let's come back to your point. Yes. I'm sorry? This is a spherically averaged density profile around a single point, single protostellar seed. Just for plotting. I have no reason. No. No, I mean, seriously, well, of course, you know, I don't have to because as you see, there are some elongation at various stages. So, but you know, even this elongation, we sort of understand from basic physics, you know, by the effective equation of state. So that's very interesting. All right, so the second part is in many calculations, we did not observe a vigorous fragmentation of this entire cloud of 1,000 solar mass. It's always like a collapsing and then forming a single stellar, a single protostellar seed. Okay, and then the inferred accretion rate is rather large. Well, this is a simple estimate, right? The accretion rate can be simply estimated as a rough guess. That is the sound speed cube over z. That is for the temperature of 1,000 Kelvin. That is about this value, much larger than the present day case. Okay. So we naturally expect, you know, if this accretion rate continues, then the within 1,000 years or so, we can get 10 solar mass object. Well, as I said, this is a rough guess using temperature. Probably yes. So the general picture we have is a primordial protostar is like a tiny hyper-accreting seed in a large cloud. The seed mass is well below solar mass, whereas the entire envelope has at least a few hundred or 1,000 solar mass. Okay, back to this radial plot. So in the most basic quantities like density and density profile, we have a good convergence like this, which I call universal density profile. So many people try to simulate this kind of thing, and even Japanese and Italian, the two German guys, and Japanese, American, and Chinese. So we do have a convergence on this global or planetary scale of sub-AU. Well, we're joking about. We really have a convergence of this. Nice power. So, Fred, did you have any more comments about this? You just wanted to see this so far? Okay, good. Okay, good. And sometimes we had a discrepancy between, say, a few other groups. Take this instantaneous gas mass accretion rate, which, say, some years ago, Tom had this plot. And in our new simulation, we have this curve. As a function of the enclosed gas mass, and this is the, you know, oh, this is, you know, I should say, this is the instantaneous gas mass accretion rate, which is at 4 pi rho v square over or something, whatever. Yeah, that's it, yeah. And we used to have this kind of discrepancy in the tensorial mass also, but we eventually figure out that by implementing the radiative transfer effect, as you do, Tom, right, with Matt Truk, we get now a consistent result. Okay. sign. That's a function of time. So, well, my point here is, you know, to get at a given point to get these things right, we need to get everything right, like temperature and density, velocity. So we have now a beautiful convergence, or at least no, statistically the same probably. All right, so back to the complicated issue of fragmentation. I said there's no fragmentation, but it's slightly more than that. So there are three things we should think about. One is a chemothermal instability happening at high densities by various molecular processes. Okay. The second is a gravitational deformation, like typically elongation of a gas cloud due to the change of the equation state. And the third is a rotation-induced breakup. And for the first part, we have, the answer is yes, meaning that the chemothermal instability is at work in some parts during the simulation. But it's not like strong enough, or the instability growth time scale is not short enough compared to the gravitational freefall time. So in the end, the vigorous fragmentation does not occur in this primordial gas case. The situation would be different if we have a like planar or filamentary structure at the same the physical conditions. The gravitational deformation we checked carefully, and the answer is no, because an effective equation state is marginally hard. It sometimes becomes close to isothermal, where the cooling is very efficient, but it doesn't last for a long time, long enough time, so that, you know, the deformation can't continue very long time to break up. And rotation-induced breakup, there are much or many things to be debated probably, and it is actually much dependent of details. And as you might know, there are a couple of works previously that report sort of fragmentation of a primordial gas cloud. Both are primordial gas cloud case, and the famous one, Brommer 99, they show this in a rotating disk, they show this fragmentation. A more recent one by Clark et al., they show like even at high density medium, they produce a few, clumps or seeds in a space. We do, or we should find this kind of fragmentation. But typically in cosmological environment or cosmological setup, like I do and with Tom do, we usually don't find this kind of configuration. That's not an absolute proof of that the primordial gas clouds do not fragment, but let's keep in our mind that there might be such cases. Right. Oh, well, in actually this case, the right plot by Clark et al., they put sink particles. So it's slightly after the formation of the first core. So, but they find an like, you know, independent cores, like three.
What is the key difference in initial conditions? You're saying they're non-cosmological.
This one clearly induces a large the spin, the disk configuration. This is like, the face-on view. So this would be. This one, I really don't know. They also assume a kind of the piecewise equation of the state. Oh, you are this clock? Oh, okay. Hi. Oh, okay. So, oh, okay. Thank you. Okay, and I'm very sorry that I'm eating up Ellen's time, so I think I should finish with this kind of statement, right? So, do you have some questions?
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's see. We do believe we have enough resolution in the spatial mass resolution, okay? And we also followed, because we use a Lagrangian technique, we also followed in our calculation the angular momentum evolution and distribution. And there are not much transfer, although there are some dissipation by weak shocks and the pressure forces. But it's not like angular momentum is totally lost. And there's always a confusion that all... Okay. I know. Okay, there's one confusion. What I showed is that the collapse of a very tiny seed in the end, and this entire cloud we haven't followed until it settles onto the star, right? Okay. So probably you think about this large gas cloud settles onto a disk and the angular momentum is transported within disk or so. Yeah. Minor. The lost amount is minor, very minor. So it's conserved, but this tiny part starts from a very small angular momentum.
Okay.
That is a...
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. That's also we found. For the accretion to take place, yeah. That is my guess. Just as my guess, you know.
I just wanted to mention that, sort of to try to connect it to contemporary approximation, that Jonathan Tan and I have developed a fully analytic model, which is based on ideas of inside out collapse. And in that case, for example, when you showed that you got the R to minus 2.2, that's exactly what you predict if you have a gamma of 1.1. So we essentially took the input of the equation state by Lomatide and others that found, and then calculate. You can then calculate the accretion rate, and that's a very important point. I think when you showed the rate that
instantaneous
rate, here, you can see that a large mass will fall off. Well, in the idealized inside out collapse model, in fact, it is zero, right? It's t equals zero, there's no one fall at all. And then you have an expansion wave that goes out, and then you get the expansion rate that's similar to what we're going to have
usually. Yeah.
So, and then the time exercise also would be a strong evolution. So then in terms of this formation, we again apply the canonical theory for contemporary romantic art formation. And in that case, we start off and there is no risk in the protostellar form, but because you do have angle-metamimic to form a disk, we then use something which is where I would say that each question comes in, that the numerical results that Tom had gotten showed that the orbital velocity at the end of the calculation was some fraction of the Keplerian velocity, and that was more like independent variables. And so we assumed that that was true up until the time when it went, we got inside the sonic function, when we assumed that once the expansion rate went out and the gas starts informing supersonically, then it was considered something else. So that's how we calculated the sonic.
Right.
And then we did some calculations. We showed that we only can go just calculations for the inner part of this. So the inner part of this, we showed that it was hot enough so that it was not cycling. But once the temperature of the disk gets below, say, 5,000 or 6,000 degrees, then we were passing things that we did not try to calculate that much stuff possible.
Although I do have one remark, because in this 3D configuration, the angular momentum vector has a rather randomization, so depending on the mass scale. So we can't really imagine this coherent rotation throughout this mass scale. So.
But a point of clarification, the plot you showed is R1-2.
Right.
Yeah. Is that the pre-collapse state, or is that stuff moving?
Let me quickly show if I have. For this one probably. Yes. So nicely, like, you know, there is. No, it is a supersonic in the innermost, right? Yeah. Oh, this is at the moment of the protostellar seed formation. So this is the end point of our simulation. Okay. Before it was like lower and lower. That is accretion shock formation. Oh, larger scale, you mean beyond this 1 parsec scale? Goes to zero, essentially. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Not actually exactly zero because of the cosmological info. In the very outmost part, yeah.
I don't think the loss is a good thing.
even if we follow further evolution. Right. Right. Oh, that's exactly what we found for yeah. Before isolated, the density, the sorry, velocity dip was further the outward. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. 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 Well, in any case, for a few specific cases, that's why I say, you know, we need really to now explore cosmological variance for depending on halo to halo. So. No,
So I wonder, have you ever tried in your view of Thomas, like I do, it's very likely it's a very small scale first spectrum in some kind of view, or if you can get radically different results?
If we have a cutoff of the power spectrum, we do have very different results. But if we have a slight, say, shallowing or steepening of the power spectrum, it just changes the collapse epoch and timing issue of this overall amplitude. And if you are interested in, I did work on a few more non-standard models, so I could show you some results.
But you need sharp features to get sharp features.
Right. Yes. On the right mass scale, like 1 million solar mass or so for dark matter, but.
Thank you.